Bhagavad Gita as it is,
chapter 6,
Dhyana Yoga, text number 47.
Yoginam
api sarvesham mat katena antak atmana sharavan bhajate yomam sa me yuktatmo mataha Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana sharavan bhajate yomam same yuktatmo mata
Yoginam of yogis api also Sarvesham, all types of Matgatena, abiding in me, always thinking of me, Antak Atmana, within himself, Shradavan, in full faith, Vajite, renders transcendental loving service, Ya, one who, Mam, unto me, the Supreme Lord. Sa, he, may, by me. Yukta Tamaha, the greatest yogi. Mataha, is considered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendent loving service unto me, that he is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Purport. The word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should avoid worshiping a respectable man or a demigod.
Purport. The word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Worship means to adore
or to show respect and honor to the
worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should avoid worshiping a respectable man or a demigod without being thoroughly condemned. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down. The Bhagavatam 11.5.3 confirms this as follows. Yesha purusham sakshad atma prabhavam ishvaram nabhajan yavijananti stana brashta padan yadaha. Anyone who does not render service and neglects his duty unto the primeval Lord, who is the source of all living entities, will certainly fall down from his constitutional position. In this verse, also the word bhajanti is used. Therefore, bhajanti is applicable to the Supreme Lord only, whereas the word worship can be applied to the demigods or to any other common living entity. The word avajanti, avajananti, used in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, is also found in the Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti mamuda. Only the fools and rascals deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Such fools take it upon themselves to write commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita without an attitude of service to the Lord. Consequently, they cannot properly distinguish between the word bhajananti and the word worship. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions towards the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruit results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the supersoul by different physical processes and the mind is on him, it is called astanga yoga. And once it passes the astanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, it is called bhakti yoga, the culmination. Actually, bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal. But to analyze bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Karma yogi, jnana yogi, or dhyana yogi, raj yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it is to be understood that he surpassed all other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of Himalayan, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga to become well situated according to the Vedic direction. The ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Shyama Sunda, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and his body is flower garland. Illuminating all his sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahma Jyoti. He incarnates in the different forms, such as Rama, Nrisimha, Varaha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descends like a human being, as the son of Mother Yasoda, and he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudev. He is a perfect child, husband, friend, and master, and he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. This stage of the highest perfection of yoga can be obtained only by bhakti yoga, as confirmed in all Vedic literature. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata gurau tasyaite katita yarta prakashante mahatmanah. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Sveta Sitar Upanishad. Bhakti means devotion, devotional service to the Lord, which is free from desire for material profit, either in this life or in the next. Devoid of such inclinations, one should fully absorb the mind in the Supreme. That is the purpose of Naish Karma. These are some of the means for the performance of bhakti or Krishna consciousness, the highest perfectional stage of the yoga system. Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana bhajate sharavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself and renders transcendent loving service unto me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Namo Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Kauravani Vidyarne Nirvisesa Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarne. In this verse, the word bhajante is used, which means that one should worship Krishna. And how to worship Krishna is explained here, that one should concentrate his mind fully on Krishna. Of course, that takes some practice. And with great faith, one should render transcendental loving service to Krishna. This way one can come to the highest platform of yoga and be the most intimately united with Krishna. And here it says that if one does not do that, then he's thoroughly condemned. So this thoroughly condemned means that as long as we have to take birth in this material world under the clutches of the material energy, then it's considered that we're condemned. Because, as we hear again and again, that the material world is not a very pleasant place. But how unpleasant it is, that may be realized in terms of great difficulty, unusual distress. Especially to leave this body is very difficult, and to take birth again is very painful, and then to undergo the same cycle repeatedly is not very pleasant for the soul. But if the soul can gradually elevate this to the platform of Krishna consciousness, where he gains the ability to actually meditate upon Krishna within himself, then he can actually realize how much happiness there is in the ocean of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, there's a progression of the ability to fix one's mind upon Krishna. Although we come to Bhakti Yoga and we're directly trying to fix our consciousness upon Krishna, especially through the chanting of the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Through the chanting of the holy names, it's the easiest way to remember progressively Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's pastimes. But as we can see, to chant without offense is not so easy. And that we get the full benefit, or even practically the full benefit. There are different stages of chanting. The first stage is called the offensive stage, known as Namaparad. And there is a clearing stage, which is known as Namabhas. So Namabhas, especially what's called Shraddha Namabhas, which means, Shraddha means faith, and Abhas means almost chanting the holy name. It is compared to the clouds in the sky. They cover the sunlight, but still the clouds are not so thick that the sunlight does not come through. In other words, some sunlight is coming through. Therefore, one is realizing to some extent the actual potency of the holy name, how Krishna is non-different from his name, and how by associating with Krishna through his holy name, we can actually experience Krishna consciousness. So that's called Namabhas. So we're trying to come to the platform of Namabhas, Shraddha Namabhas. Shraddha means that there is some philosophy behind our chanting. We're not simply chanting without knowledge or without any faith. That there's actually experience, there's knowledge, and if we chant in that way, then the Abhas actually has much more, or although it's Abhas, still has much more of an effect. One can also chant, for instance, Prabhupada said on a tape, there was one Barba, he was chanting the name of Radha, but his wife was named Radha, and so every time he chanted Radha, he'd remember his wife. So that is not the type of remembrance we want to have. We want to, when we chant the holy name, we want to remember, as he explains here, or as explained in another part also, the Krishna with the peacock feather in his hair, blooming eyes like lotus petals, head, figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and surrounded by his loving associates in Vrindavan. So this is what we want to remember, and there's the element of faith. Not that we simply think that it's some imagination, but by experience we come to the platform of actually knowing that this meditation is actually Krishna. That Krishna is alive, Krishna is conscious, he's also conscious in our meditation of him, and after focusing one's consciousness upon him, one can also try to feel his presence or give one's love to Krishna. with some faith, shraddha. So this is shraddha namabhas. We are chanting Hare Krishna and trying to remember Krishna's, hear the name so nicely, chant it so nicely, that Krishna's form is there. And Prabhupada once said that we should chant and then try and feel Krishna's presence in his name. So by feeling Krishna's presence, one will actually be able to see, experience much more vividly what is the potency of the holy name. That if one can chant and actually feel Krishna's presence, then that is a great step towards developing firm faith in Krishna consciousness, because then one will actually see the purifying effect that, that Krishna has. That Krishna, he is the source of all sweetness, he's the source of all transcendental bliss. Just like Akrura, he dropped off Krishna and Balaram. And he went to Krishna Balaram took their bath, and he went to take his bath. And he entered into the Jamuna, and he saw Krishna and Balaram there. And Krishna turned into a Mahavishnu, and Balaram turned into Sheshanaga, where Lord Vishnu is resting on his body. And they were surrounded by the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Prahlad Maharaj, and they were all entering, offering prayers. And Akrura also began to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his body trembled, and he became overwhelmed in ecstasy, and he entered completely into samadhi, meditating upon Lord Vishnu. So, Krishna, Lord Vishnu, all his expansions, they're the sources of unlimited transcendental happiness, and that the more one can absorb his mind in Krishna, the more one actually experiences that happiness. The aim of creation, the aim of everything, is that Krishna is pleased. And the one who knows how to please Krishna the best, of course, is Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani is instructing everyone, that's known as disciple succession. She has her friends, she instructs them how to please Krishna. Her friends instruct their friends. In this way, there's a disciple succession. And the spiritual master, he's either representative of Lord Nityananda or Srimati Radharani. The most confidential servant of Srimati Radharani or the representative of Lord Nityananda. So as the representative of Lord Nityananda, he detaches one from material existence. And as a representative, of course, of Srimati Radharani, he gives one full instructions how to participate in the loving service of Krishna. So the more Krishna is pleased, it is just like it is always compared to the watering the root of a tree. The more the water is applied to the root, the more all the branches, leaves, and flowers receive the water. And sometimes it's compared when Srimati Radharani embraces the Krishna, it is like a creeper embracing the tree, and automatically all the different leaves and parts of the creeper also enjoy. So the more Krishna becomes satisfied, the more we become aware of Krishna's satisfaction, and those two go together. The more we try to please Krishna, the more Krishna gives us awareness of him, and the more we become awareness of how he's being pleased, and the more we become, we can appreciate how much pleasure there is in Krishna's pleasure. So this is the process, and here it mentions that to understand this, how to become detached from material existence and attached to Krishna, there are different stages of yoga. Those who are in the gross bodily conception of life, for them, karma yoga is recommended. To give up the idea that we are the owners of the material world, or that ownership here is something important, one can practice karma yoga, doing his activities for the pleasure of Krishna, and offering the results of such activities to Krishna. Therefore, Bhakti Vinod Thakura sung, Manasa deho geho yo kichumara arpilu tuva pade nandi kishora. That my dear Nanda Maharaj, my dear son of Nanda Maharaj, that my mind, manasa deho, my body, geho, my house, yo ki tumura, and everything that's in it, everything else I may have, arpilu tu twaya, tua, pade, to your lotus feet I'm offering these things, nandi kushora. So this is the beginning of devotional service, offering Krishna what we think is ours, practicing like that. And the more one does that, the more he tries to sincerely offer Krishna his energy. The more he sees that Krishna reciprocates, and the more one becomes encouraged. And the cultivation of knowledge about Krishna, that is jnana yoga, although there may be other types of karma yoga, following ritualistic principles, and jnana yoga to gain material opulence, and jnana yoga becoming detached from material existence and trying to merge into Brahman. But real karma yoga means to offer the results of one's activities to Krishna and to gain knowledge about Krishna. That is jnana yoga. That is real jnana. And ultimately, by the practice of karma yoga and jnana yoga, one can actually, by becoming thoughtful, one learns how to meditate upon Krishna. At the beginning, one may not be able to fully meditate because that takes some practice. It explains that at the stage of Bhajana Kriya, for instance, one's meditation is mixed with material topics. But still, we can try and think of Krishna. Just like Akrura, he was thinking of Krishna, for instance, in the Rasa dance. He was thinking that when Krishna was dancing with the gopis became fatigued, and Krishna took his hand, which is as fragrant as the lotus flower, and wiped away the pearl-like drops of perspiration on the faces of the gopis, and therefore they became refreshed. So we can meditate like this, thinking of Krishna's lotus hand, just like we may have smelled a flower. Perhaps we've been fortunate enough to smell a lotus flower, or any kind of flower we like. So we can imagine what that flower smells like, and we can understand that this is what Krishna's hand smells like. But trying to smell, remember the smell of a lotus flower or other nice flowers, and thinking of it in relation with Krishna, this is a purified transcendental experience and elevates the consciousness. And imagining the gopis dancing with Krishna, and they have pearl-like drops of perspiration on their faces, and Krishna is taking his lotus-like hand and wiping away these drops of perspiration, and therefore the gopis becoming relieved, refreshed. So this type of meditation, using our mind, we can develop by using our intelligence in other ways. In other words, the power to actually concentrate on Krishna and actually visualize and experience with our spiritual senses the pastimes as it described in these books, because that's what these books are meant for. So we can actually concentrate on them and imagine what they're talking about, actually visualize them and experience them. So by practice like that, constantly practicing using our intelligent Krishna service, being thoughtful in such a way as to aid our meditation, so that to make our meditation as easy as possible. So this takes some practice. The senses are long addicted to different types of sense gratification. The mind is long addicted to mental speculation, principally hankering and lamentation. But still, by practice, gradually, shanai shanaru paramed buddhya griti drihitaya atmasamstam maya kritva nakin chedapi chintaya. Gradually, step by step, one should become situated in trance by means of intelligence, sustained with full conviction, and thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone and should think of nothing else. So if we're actually making some endeavor, although maya is very expert, so we become deviated. But one should not become discouraged. One should simply try to make more effort. Maya will always yoga chalati manasa. As soon as one makes an effort, Maya will try to defeat the practitioner by so many allurements. But one should not become discouraged. One should simply try again and again and again. Just like the example is used that a little bird, she laid her eggs on the shore of the ocean, and the ocean came and took the eggs away. And the little bird threatened to dry up the ocean. But the ocean laughed at her for her impossible determination. But still the little bird went to the ocean and started to take in her beak little drops of water and deposit them away from the ocean. In this way, the bird was determined to dry up the ocean. So everyone was laughing at the little bird. But then Garuda heard about the little bird and her determination. So he came and he said to the ocean that if you don't give back the eggs, then I'll dry you up. So Garuda, he can actually dry up the whole universe because he's Krishna's empowered devotee. Therefore the ocean became afraid and immediately delivered the eggs. So when Krishna sees that we're making some effort, that we're determined, then he reciprocates accordingly. So to make a little effort, Krishna will reciprocate, and then we always have the opportunity to make some more effort. Even though Maya may take our minds away, but still, we should bring it back again, make some more effort. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, they have created a regulated program. Regulated program so that we have the opportunity every day to try to fix our minds upon Krishna, and especially in the association of devotees, it becomes very powerful. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido bhavanti ritkayana rasayanam kata. Especially in the association of satam prasanga, those who are trying to be Krishna conscious, then gradually this hearing about Krishna becomes relishable. It may not be always relishable, but that is not due to the fact that Krishna is not relishable, but our material contamination is not relishable, and we become more conscious of that contamination in the process of trying to become Krishna conscious. Therefore it says, Sat Krishna nama charitadi sitapya vidya pito pitata rasyanasya riko richokatanu kinvadra sarinam sayuvidushta bhavi kramagavati tatkala mudlahantri. That the holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna, they're all transcendently sweet, just like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jointness of avidya ignorance cannot relish anything sweet, it is wonderful how by simply chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within the tongue, and his disease is destroyed at the root. So, just like we were trying to practice during the every day, chanting at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra. And I think all of us have the experience that it's not so easy to fix the mind on simply chanting and hearing. But if one makes an effort to do that, that one will see not only the chanting becomes more pleasurable, but in other activities which are in some ways even easier to perform to fix the mind, such as kirtan, that one will find that actually one was able to think of Krishna and become more absorbed in the kirtan even more. That the practice one makes during japa carries over to the rest of one's activities so that one is able to focus his consciousness upon Krishna for the rest of the day. And as one does that, folk tries to focus his consciousness upon Krishna and the instructions of the spiritual master, then the result is that when he tries to chant japa the next day, then he can chant with much more concentration and eventually much more feeling. Of course, from the concentration, from the association of Krishna, the feeling comes, and with that feeling one is encouraged to concentrate even more. When one realizes how nice it is to concentrate on Krishna. So here it mentions that Yasya Deve Bra Bhakir Yata Deve Tita Guru tasyaiti kaita prakashante mahatmanaha. That it is through the directions of the parampara, the disciple succession, one can learn the science of Krishna consciousness. That we cannot do this by our own. Simply by reading books, it becomes very difficult to understand. But if we hear from others who have practical experience in Krishna consciousness, it becomes much easier. And if we follow their instructions, then gradually it is possible to understand what is Krishna consciousness, what it's actually like. When we please Krishna, when we please Krishna's devotees, when Krishna sees that we're qualified for him to reveal himself to us, then we can actually understand the science of Krishna. So, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes. So, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes. It doesn't mean that we surpass all the stages by coming to Bhakti Yoga, in the sense that we've already mastered Karma Yoga, that we're already giving all our energies to Krishna. We've surpassed Jnana Yoga, we know everything about Krishna, and we've come to Bhakti Yoga, we're simply absorbed in an ocean of love. That's pretty rare for a bhakta. Of course, for a real bhakta, that's not rare, that's what a bhakta means. But it means that we're taking to a process which is superior to Jnana Yoga, to Karma Yoga. We're taking to the highest process, and by taking to this process sincerely, automatically one learns the art of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, and even Astanga Yoga. All these arts are automatically learned as one practices Bhakti Yoga. So the more one becomes advanced on the path of Bhakti Yoga, the more he automatically becomes advanced on the path of Karma, Jnana, and Astanga Yoga. All the other yogas are automatically performed as one performs Bhakti Yoga. But to perform Bhakti Yoga correctly, one also has to have some idea of what is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, etc. Because we have a tendency to be attached to the things of this world. We have a tendency to be attached to our speculations. Therefore, we have to focus the mind without hesitation, without interruption, without motivation on Krishna. We have to have some idea what these other yogas are also. But generally, we're practicing simply chanting Hare Krishna and hearing. That is our practice. And not becoming attached to these other things. Or at least we're trying to practice like that. Simply to focus our consciousness on Krishna. And if we do that, then automatically these things are practiced. Everyone's an individual. Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion that generally people come to devotional service as a result of previous practice of devotional service. And even sometimes it may be found that someone has not practiced in the past, but he's simply taking out the process now. But generally this is a result of previous practice in devotional service. And generally, one practices other types of yogas. They may have reached perfection in the other types of yogas, or they may not have. They simply may have become advanced from one yoga to the next, or they may have taken up bhakti yoga immediately. But we've been here for so long, since time immemorial, that it's unlikely we haven't experimented with all these different yogas at some time or another. We've experimented with everything. Even in this lifetime, we've probably experienced everything practically. But generally, it's not such an advantage to be, as it says in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, that if one takes up the impersonal path and becomes very expert at it, then it becomes very difficult to actually give up these this impersonal conception. So generally, becoming too advanced on the impersonal path is not a qualification for becoming very advanced in bhakti yoga. One may have become immersed in Brahman, came back, took up the process of bhakti yoga, and now he's spending lifetimes trying to get rid of this impersonal conception. Generally, it's innocent people, they take to the process of bhakti much easier than people who are too qualified on other paths, or at least sometimes. Especially the impersonalist path. The strict or not strict, of course what we want is unmotivated, undeviated devotional service to Krishna. So if one is not, quote, not strict, and he's undeviated and unmotivated, that is strict. But we know that Prabhupada, I think even in San Francisco, it mentions in Lilamrita, that there are two moods. There are the ones who are trying to spread Krishna consciousness, and they're very enthusiastic to do so. And they weren't so strict to following the principles or the regulations. And others were very strict, but they were not as enthusiastic. So, according to Haridas Thakura, when he told Sanatana Goswami, he said, or Sanatana Goswami told Haridas Thakura, that some people preach very nicely, but they're not very strict at following. And some follow very nicely, but they're not very enthusiastic about preaching. But you're the best because you do both of them. So, if we're strictly following, at the same time we're enthusiastically preaching, that's the best. We want both. The golden egg comes when you have both halves of chicken. You have one or the other, you don't get the golden egg. You need both. So we can, those who are strictly following, they should appreciate the fact that some people are enthusiastically preaching. And those who are enthusiastically preaching should also appreciate those who are strictly following. So that we can gain both qualities, and therefore we can actually get Krishna consciousness. So they're both minds, Prabhupada encouraged both of them. And eventually, the idea is to become full in Krishna consciousness and easily be able to do both. Yes.
Yeah. I heard already in that explanation of this question that comes from this verse from Master Pranishan of Vishnu. And then this is one word that if you render service and you come to classes and all that is troublesome to your heart is almost completely eliminated. So I need to think that
because even at the state of nishtha, there may be some subtle material desires and conceptions. They're still in the heart, but they don't bother one. They don't impede one's practice of devotional service. Now, before one comes to nishtha, desires may actually stop one's performance either subtly or grossly of devotional service when they become absorbed in them. But even at the state of nishtha, they may be present, but they don't disturb or deviate one from the practice of devotional service. That's what nishtha means. Therefore, after one actually becomes firmly on the state of nishtha, when he's not disturbed by laya, sleep, by vikshepa, material consciousness, by things like rasavad, material taste from material sense objects, or material consciousness such as anger or lust, when one is no longer disturbed by these things, and he's actually in the state of nishtha, and is advancing towards uttama bhakti, or spontaneous devotion through ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. One advances naturally and rapidly through these things without any impediment. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he cleansed the Gunditja temple, and he took all the pebbles and he threw them outside, and then he cleansed it again. So he showed that the cleansing the heart has a lot to do with cleansing oneself externally also. That devotional service is best cultivated in the mode of goodness, best cultivated in the association of devotees, best cultivated in an atmosphere which is most conducive to remembering Krishna. So the feeling in the heart can be aroused when one is constantly engaged in Krishna service with love. Tesham satatam yuktanam bhajantam pritipuravakam. Then didami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupyanti te. So it's certainly better to execute devotional service in an atmosphere which is most conducive to remembering Krishna and in the purest atmosphere. So that's what the temple is supposed to be. A place where things are arranged so that Krishna is easily remembered, that the devotees are dressing themselves in such a way as to most easily remember Krishna. Therefore, it's best cultivated in such an atmosphere. As far as the feeling in the heart goes, there's no barometer where you take these thermometers and you put it into a person's mouth and it registers how much bhakti they have. That's something one has to experience for himself. But according to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, tesham satatam yuktanam. So if one is constantly engaged in Krishna service, and that is there's 9 different types of devotional service, constantly hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna, acting for Krishna, remembering Krishna, serving Krishna, etc. There are 9 processes. And with pritipurvakam, with some ecstasy, with some joyfulness, and then he's making advancement. And how to judge that? That has to be judged for oneself. Therefore it says, bhakti pureshanu vyaktiya anyatra trisha ekakala prapara manasya tashnatasyus tushti pushti shudapaya nigasam. That just like when one eats a meal, he simultaneously experiences the alleviation of hunger, the satisfaction from eating, and the growing strength from the food. So by the proper performance of bhakti, one feels actual love for Krishna, growing awareness of Krishna and love for him, detachment from those things that take one's mind away from Krishna. So if one is experiencing that, then he doesn't have to be, he's not bewildered by such arguments. In other words, if people are happy executing devotional service outside in their homes, that's nice. And also some people are happy executing devotional service in the atmosphere which is most conducive to remembering Krishna inside the temple. So if some people can do it, become happy serving Krishna outside in a less favorable atmosphere, then why can't people become happy inside in a more favorable atmosphere? As far as the feeling in the heart goes, well, we're happy that people are feeling great love and ecstasy serving Krishna outside. And we're also feeling love and ecstasy serving Krishna inside. Krishna is everywhere. But if he's everywhere, then why isn't he in the temple too? Does that answer the question? There's a class called the Aryan Samajans. They say that Krishna is everywhere, but he's not in the temple. So we don't agree with that philosophy. Anything else? The thing that to avoid is unnecessarily getting into arguments. You know, that we're happy inside, we're happy outside, but you can't be happy inside. No, we're happy inside, but you can't be happy outside. You can be happy everywhere if you're in Krishna consciousness. But if you get into arguments with such people, you won't be very happy. So better to offer respects and smile. And I remember one time, Prabhupada was giving a lecture at the University of Buffalo, and one boy, very defiantly, asked him, he said, "Swamiji," he said, "are you really happy?" And Prabhupada looked at him very gravely and said, "If I told you, would you believe me?" And then again the boy was saying, "Swamiji, come on, tell us, are you really happy?" And Prabhupada even more gravely said, "If I told you, would you believe me?" He said, "Oh, come on, Swamiji, you know, just tell us all, are you really happy?" I looked at him very gravely and said, "If I told you, would you believe me?" And then finally Prabhupada smiled and said, "Yes, I am very happy." And everyone goes, "Jai Prabhupada!" And everyone was very happy, and then the boy with a big frown sat down. So if we're actually in Krishna consciousness, no one will have to give us a certificate the fact that we're happy or not. Okay, thank you very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.